Hey, everybody, before we start the podcast, we have a great, big, huge, mega announcement to make. We are going to be the hosts and MCs of the Fandom Legacy Convention.
Fandom Legacy Con is a three-day multi-fandom event focused on attendee engagement, immersion, and building a community.
It's a comics, gaming, and anime convention that's going on March 6th through 8th, 2020 at the Hyatt Regency North Dallas in Richardson, Texas.
So come on out and be a part of Fandom. For more information, check out FandomLegacyCon.com.
We hope to see you there.
Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the eighth dimension, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two monkey boys, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today, back by popular demand, is a reassumption.
Woo!
So, everybody, thanks for your feedback. You like it when we reassume things. So, we're trying to think, well, we did Legend last time.
Yep.
We've done Tron, sort of.
Yep.
So, now, because one of our buddies likes a cult classic movie, our producer, not Scott, one of his favorite cult classic movies is Buckaroo Banzai. In the Eighth Dimension? Is that the full title?
Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
See, there you go. Correction. Thank you, not Scott. So we are going to sit down. We've popped some popcorn. We got movie snacks.
And candy.
And we are going to sit down here in the studio and watch the Buckaroo Banzai film. And then we will be back. No time to you and an hour. And how long does the runtime on this?
145, I think.
145 for us. And then we'll be right back here to reassume Buckaroo Banzai. Does it hold up? Now, the thing is, Mikey, you've never seen it all the way through.
Nope, this is my first time start to finish.
Ditto here.
There you go.
So it should be fun.
Oh, this is exciting.
I'm ashamed to know you both.
Oh, well, we'll see how he feels after we watch it. So we will go watch it right now, and yes. We will be back.
We will time travel. Diddly, 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 diddly.
All right, and we are back.
Diddly, diddly, diddly,
diddly, diddly. Or tweet, tweet, or I don't even know how to make the noise that the oscillation over thruster made. So we didn't watch it alone. You heard Not Scott earlier, so Not Scott is here with us as well.
I'll be going by Blue Blazer Irregular number 72 tonight.
Oh, okay.
And to be on theme.
Also, the booming voice of God, that guy Brad, is
hey
here.
Guys.
He watched it with us as well. We have the whole crew here, and we just sat down and watched Buckaroo Banzai.
Ooh, we traveled to the eighth dimension to planet 10, and we made it back.
So for those of you who don't know, Buckaroo Banzai is a cult classic, I guess you'd call it, from 1980.
Four?
Yes.
And it stars...
There's a lot of big names.
Stars a lot of A-list talent.
There's a lot of big names in here.
Stars Peter Weller, John Lithgow. You've also got Jeff Goldblum, Ellen Barkin, Clancy Brown. Who else?
Oh, I'm just glad you said Clancy Brown.
Several character actors you would recognize from various things.
Yeah.
Yep. Bunch of faces. It's a bunch of people where it's like, oh, I know that guy's face, and he was in that thing and that thing. What is that name?
That guy with the sad eyes, who's that creepy guy in every movie.
Yeah, he always plays like a mortician.
And directed by someone that I had never heard of because he's mostly a screenwriter, W.D. Richter.
Okay.
Wrote Invasion of the Body Snatchers, wrote Big Trouble in Little China, Kurt Russell flick.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I can see touches of that in Buckaroo Banzai.
And oddly enough, Stealth. 2005 movie with Jessica Biel, Airplanes. And
where the plane? Is that the one? Yeah. That's one where the jet.
Yeah, he wrote that. Same guy.
More evilness and jets. I think I know this guy's theme and brand.
Evilness and jets. All right, so Buckaroo Banzai, when it came out, I was around. I don't remember hearing anything about it.
Yep.
The first time I heard about it was in the early 90s. There was a comic book store I used to go to.
Oh,
and they were playing it on the TV there. And I was like, what is that strange movie I'm seeing up there?
That's a pretty rad movie to have. And like, that seems appropriate to have that be the background setting for a comic book store.
Yeah.
Buckaroo Banzai. So it was on him playing.
So yeah, he was like, it's Buckaroo Banzai. And I was like, what's Buckaroo Banzai?
I saw it in the theater and remember having this feeling as if I was missing more of the universe. Like I felt like there should be a line of books, or is this the sequel to something? am I just getting into this in the middle?
But you saw it first run.
I saw it first run.
Did somebody drag you? Did you was, like? Do you remember seeing commercials for it?
I think that was
it?
Me and my dad, or me and my dad and some friends or something. You know, he used to drag me to the movies all the time, which I loved. So, but yeah, I remember being really taken with the world and thinking, this has got to, there's so much more. I want to know all these other guys' stories, except that one poor guy, Bob, who had no backstory whatsoever and didn't even have a cool nickname.
He might as well have been wearing a red shirt.
You just figured the poor guy was going to get it.
There's a lot of things left unexplained. There's a whole bunch of explaining going on, but some of the things like Bob are left unexplained. That's pretty funny. But
so I don't think I saw this movie all the way through until just now.
That's understandable.
So what about you, Mikey? You had said you'd never seen it all the way through either.
Nope, I only know about it because like there are parts of it that carry over into like pop culture and references, and you see like quotes and gifs of it online.
What were some of the quotes and gifs that you've seen online?
I had always heard that the phrase monkey boy, like I know that's a quote that people yell at cons and stuff, but I'm like I never knew where the reference was a pull from. So now seeing it here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on board.
That's easily one of my favorite lines is laugh while you can, monkey boy.
But I only knew it as in the periphery. So this is my first time watching it start to finish. And well, we'll get into it in a little bit, but I had a lot of fun.
And we know that, Not Scott, this is one of your favorite movies.
It is. It is one of my favorite movies.
When did you first see it, though?
I saw it when I was 8 years old, 1984, when it first came out.
Right.
Now, I do not remember seeing it in the movie theater. I remember Buckaroo Banzai being one of those treasure hunts at Blockbuster, you know?
Oh, yes.
You know, at 8 years old, I wasn't really making my own decisions about what movies I wanted to go see. I knew my brother went and saw it, so it had to be cool, because at that age, you know.
Oh, yeah, anything
you
always
idolized your bigger brother.
I get it.
But it was one of those Blockbuster finds, you know, Easter egg hunts. You know, we're going to go rent Buckaroo Banzai tonight. We would go, and I bet I rented it no less than 3 or 4 times throughout my elementary and junior high years.
That's awesome.
That would explain some of the love for it, things that you see that young sometimes.
Absolutely. Very, very impressionable when I saw it. Very wheelhouse kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's as memorable as Star Wars, but it's certainly... I do. It does hold some of the same space as very impressionable when I first saw it as a young man.
As a young fella.
I remember a couple other action movies from around that time, and to put things in a very 1980s package, this movie kind of really encapsulates a lot of that weird 80s energy.
This movie is very 80s.
Very 80s.
It's almost painfully 80s.
That's why it's great.
It's hard looking back on it going, yep, I dressed like that. I don't know about two belts and that leather
tie. I was
a
little fella in that time, and I remember thinking, these are the coolest people ever. Come on, Perfect Tommy with all the collars that are so incredibly popped.
Oh, it looked like a feature-length MTV video. Oh,
yes!
It is definitely sensory overload. Yeah. It's like,
it very much was.
You want to see hip and cool people doing hip and cool things? Here you go. Also, there's going to be the synth noises.
Oh, lots of 80s synth on that soundtrack, for sure.
You know what, though? I've complained about it. I don't know if I've complained about it on the podcast, but how the 80s... One of the reasons Star Wars holds up is because they use classical music. They didn't use music of, like, the era.
Oh, I got you.
And there are some things, like Lady Hawk, for one. Great movie, but the soundtrack is, like, this synth stuff. And it's just...
Proto-Vangelis.
Yeah, and it just throws me out of the movie so hard that I can't stand it. But this movie, because it's so 80s, the music just... Well, there you go. That's correct.
That's 80s.
That is correct.
That was what it was part like. Of the kitsch. Yeah. I mean, let's get into the makeup of the Hong Kong Cavaliers. And
yeah, because how many action... You said there was a bunch of action movies around that time. How many action movies did you see where like the main character had a band that was also like his mercenary group?
Right. Well, now, first of all, for those who don't know, let's give a little context. Buckaroo Banzai
give us context.
Is a genuine Renaissance man. That was the archetype that they were going for.
He was a multi-instrumentalist.
He is a multi-instrumentalist. He's a rock star. Let's just do the checklist. Jobs that he had. Brain surgeon, test pilot, dimension traveler, Zen philosopher.
Knows martial arts and particle physics.
Particle physicist, that's right. Truly a Renaissance man, and he has gathered around him an eclectic group of individuals who... either A, have to be able to shoot, or B, be able to dance. Because you got to be in his band.
With the oddly repeated cowboy motif in about 3 different variations.
Jeff Goldblum looked like a Time Store Cowboy.
Yeah, like,
okay, first of all, it's cowboy. The Jeff Goldblum, yeah, looks, because let's not deny his.
Oh no, he definitely relevant has his place in pop culture. Presence in this movie.
I don't think anybody but Jeff Goldblum could pull off the cowboy look with the nickname jersey. I mean, that seems very on brand for Jeff Goldblum.
He looks like an action figure.
The thing about this movie is it just proves again, once again, Jeff Goldblum, people are like, why is that guy so weird? He's always been exactly the same.
Very true.
The same guy. The same guy. That's the same guy there. And he's a little more understated because I think he's trying to keep it on the down low because he's still young and needs to get work in Hollywood. Yeah. But it's you can see the Jeff Goldblum we all know and love now. He's there.
Embodied in like characters like the Grandmaster and stuff like that, where he just really is allowed to be as wacky and as zany as he wants. He's adorable in this movie. So
it is the Jeff Goldblum character, though.
It's but along and opposite them. Let's quickly the bad guy John Lithgow chewing the scenes having a blast. First of all, a little bipolar about trying to figure out where his character's from.
His accent was so bad.
He's East Russian. He's Italian. Well, he's from Texas. What's going on?
He had a very well established dialect coach. That's not true. That's a lie. It was actually one of the tailors on the set that he worked with was Italian, and Lithgow decided he wanted the Mussolini thing. I think you even said that while we were watching it, Kevin.
Yeah, he was doing the Mussolini speech in that one part, but in other parts, I mean, obviously this guy was from Italy by way of Romania and like...
And the Eighth Dimension.
Ukraine or something. Yeah. It was all over the place. It was like, sometimes he sounded like Mario, sometimes he sounded like he was a vampire.
Yeah, Transylvania. Yeah, talk about somebody, one of the few people that could upstage Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum, which he's kind of subdued in this movie, but John Lithgow is like at 11 this entire time. They didn't give him any notes. They didn't give him any limits. They said, hey, play it how you feel it. And
genius,
he's like,
go run wild. Yeah. He was absolutely hilarious in this movie.
Is it okay if I scream and make faces and then cower randomly every once in a while?
The funny thing, though, he was playing like an alien.
Yeah.
And then in Third Rock from the Sun, He's basically that character again.
So good. Hooray, John Lithgow.
Speaking of greatness, other cast members, we have Ellen Barkin in her prime, I might add.
A very 1980s Ellen Barkin.
Very 1980s. Yes.
Ellen Barkin and Ellen Barkin's leg feature prominently in this movie.
Yeah, her leg.
Yes, Ellen Barkin legs are...
But I knew that name, and I kind of recognize her face. What is she from? Because, like... She seems like an 80s kind of
everything
it girl.
Else in the 80s.
Oh, okay. So
she did a lot of stuff. Sea of Love. I'm looking at IMDb right now. Sea of Love, Drop Dead Fred, This Boy's Life, The Fan.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So she's
been around for a while.
Been around for a long time. Born in 1954.
Ooh.
So says IMDb.
She would have been 30 in that film then.
There you go.
Ish, 29.
Playing the damsel in distress, kind of, but also the smarty when it comes up, but then it throws Buckaroo Banzai for a loop every once in a while.
There was so much. Nobody underacted in this movie at all. Let's just say that.
Nobody underacted?
If you know what I mean.
I'm pretty sure that was a standing direction from Mr. Richter.
There was some 80s acting.
There was some overacting, and there was some bad acting, but there was no underacting, that's for sure.
That is so much fun.
So wait.
It doesn't hold up by today's standards, but that's the fun of it.
The film definitely has some problems.
It didn't hold up by 1984 standards. It was put together to be campy. I think some of this was built in almost a Rocky Horror Show way.
So before we get into all that business, let's talk about Peter Weller, RoboCop.
Oh, yes.
Plays Buckaroo Banzai.
He does. I was kind of sad he didn't turn into RoboCop. But.
He's supposed to be half Japanese, but like I said, he's about as Asian as a Panda Express.
Yeah.
I mean, that was... I don't know.
His mom was Asian.
I don't care.
And his dad, no, his mom was American.
His dad
was Japanese.
Okay, sure. So that
and
makes
his uncle
difference?
Was a chest of drawers.
It didn't. I mean,
I'm not saying he was wooden. There is just something. It's very understated.
No, you're right.
I'm 12 different things. Wait,
I think you're right, Brad. I think that Peter Weller's like told. you're like the coolest guy ever. And to him, like being cool is just being, I don't care about anything.
Yeah. It was a little bit of that. It was very casual. Yeah, everything was super casual, except for some reason, that little circle he drove around on the motorcycle. That was very, there was a lot of intense acting there.
Yeah, all the lines, like even when they were like running around after people and he was giving orders, they were like the most casual orders ever.
He's like, cool, baby. We'll just do whatever. I'm 80s cool.
It's all brought together in that one scene in the bar when they're doing the musical number and they make their entrance and you see, all right, this is cool. Here's the Hong Kong Cavaliers and, you know, he's getting kisses. And
yeah, why are they called the Hong Kong Cavaliers if he's half Japanese?
And he winds up on there. That's a good question. He winds up on stage and he's playing the guitar and he has a shredding solo and perfect Tommy is just like, yeah, great, that's my job. And then he turns and he's playing the trumpet. And then he sings and then she's sad and maybe Ellen Barkin gets entered. Now he's playing the piano. You know, this girl's
hey. Don't be mean.
No, I'm not. It's great. I'm saying.
Somebody crying out there?
This shows of that.
I was so impressed by that. They were playing a full-on rock song, and he stops it, and he goes, wait, no. Through all this blaring music, I hear the sound of tears.
He said, is there somebody out there not having a good time?
Yeah, and I went, yeah, I'm not having a good time right now.
Yeah, Kevin hadn't bought in at all.
Kevin was so sure that he knew what was going on.
Oh, that's such a great scene. It was awesome. He heard tears through a rock song.
Well,
add that to
while playing a tiny trumpet. Tears.
Add that to his list of magical powers.
So the thing about the... oh, man. There's other, we forgot some people. There's some other people. There's Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
Old Doc Brown is one of the bad guy aliens.
Doc Brown. Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure after seeing like when Buckaroo Banzai goes into the eighth dimension on his
jet car,
which is that, like
a Ford F-150,
like a cable truck. No, it was an F-2. It's a dually.
Actually fully operational jet truck that was built by a jet truck building club in California. Yes,
was it really
a jet truck building club, and they built it out of a cable truck, like a cable guy's truck,
and they welded a speedboat to the back of it and added some jet parts.
But they keep all their plumbing fittings and stuff in the various toolboxes.
Sir, that's all part of the oscillation overthruster.
But that's what I was getting to. The oscillation overthruster. They showed a little bit and had it almost looked like the flux capacitor.
Yeah, speaking of Back to the Future.
Remember? And then it kind of had a Back to the Future vibe when he went to the eighth dimension. So it made total sense that Christopher Lloyd was after that because he needed it, because he needed to get Back to the Future.
Post-Reverend Jim Christopher Lloyd, too, which was also one of my favorite Christopher Lloyd bits.
Post-Reverend Jim.
Yeah, Reverend Jim from Taxi. Pre-Doc Brown.
But I would say one of his best character names ever, John Big Booty.
Yeah.
Big Booty!
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Laugh away, monkey boy.
That was the thing. This movie, here's the best thing I can say for it at this point, right now. No, it came across to me as a live-action anime. Because it had that, what the heck is going on, bizarreness that a lot of animes have.
Yep.
But just enough stuff to keep you interested.
Yep.
But at the same time, the thing that really bummed me is I couldn't tell what are you trying to do? Are you straight up trying to make something farcical? Because if you're doing that, you only got halfway there. Are you straight up trying to make something like super cool? Because I think you're only, I don't know.
You are hitting on some of the fundamental problems with the movie. In fact, about halfway through production, they shifted cinematographers because they didn't want the campy, fun.
Too late.
Right. And so half the movie got shot with this camp kind of an 80s cartoony kind of a look to it.
I gotcha.
And then the other half came in and he tried to make it more dirty and gritty. And I forget the name of the cinematographer.
It is really two movies.
But yeah, they had, you know, the big studio execs didn't like what they were seeing in the daily. So of course, brilliant studio execs, they changed out the cinematographer halfway through filming.
Is that why sometimes they look at that, what's his name, John Brown? they look at him and he's a dude and sometimes he's an alien. So inconsistent.
It was supposed to be.
You can find a ton of continuity errors in the whole thing.
But I mean, a lot of that was the very They Live thing, showing you that Buckaroo was the only one who had gotten zapped and could see through their disguise.
What about the time?
And that's that whole great scene. I'm sorry, that whole great scene with Jeff Goldblum when he takes his little vest thing and breathes in and looks back over at John Rastafari and Millie Vanilli
John
guy.
John Parker.
And he sees him, and then he kind of makes a face, and he looks back down, and it's beautiful.
Don't make eye contact.
It's just one of the, it's a typical 80s movie, though. They explained it once with one line, like, oh, Buckaroo Banzai, I can see them, and it's because of a serum, whatever. And then they never talk about it again. Yeah. They just show flashes of the alien, and you're like, wait, is this bad movie, or is this?
So one of my favorite parts of the whole thing, so Buckaroo can see him after he gets the phone call.
He gets shot.
They shock him. Yep. And did you notice how he transferred that to Professor Hakuto? He licks his palm and goes boom right on his forehead and electrocutes him, and suddenly
transfers the formula.
You can see it. That's how he transferred the formula.
Oh, so much wackiness.
They did make good use of ILM's electricity effect that they invented for Empire Strikes Back. I think it was the first time I ever remember seeing it. Was it in the first? I can't remember because the special editions messed me up.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't remember in the original. Brad will help me because he's old enough to remember seeing those a million times. Did you see the original ones a million times too, Scott? I believe in the first one, when like the ships blew up and stuff, they just blew up.
Yes.
And the guy screamed and they showed up. But I think Empire Strikes Back was the first time on Hoth with those speeders that we saw that electricity effect when the electricity went around.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, it shot around.
Or did they do that with R2?
When
R2 got hit by the Jawas, did it have the electricity effect on?
Yes, it did. And shortly after.
Or are we thinking of special editions there?
When they pop off the restraining bolt, you see that. And that's an after effect. That's drawn on the cells. Well,
anyway, that electricity effect, that is so 80s, because once someone figured out how to do it, they started using it all over the place.
Oh, that's cool. I want to do it too.
I like to think you have to pay one price and you can use it as much as you want.
No,
they paid their one price, so they're getting their money worth on that effect.
It's funny. It's just like when they figured out how to CGI water properly.
Oh, there you go.
Then, like, Titanic and all, like, then there was like a million that's like, let's do the one about the ships off the coast of Boston. And they started doing everything they could with water.
Because we know how to do water now.
We can
do
water now.
And then for Buckaroo Banzai, we know lightning. So everything's electricity.
Everything was electricity.
Incidentally, there was a Wilhelm scream towards the end in the warehouse fight there, too.
aren't the aliens literally called the electric?
Electroids or something like that?
Electroids.
Yeah. And red electroids.
The like benevolent and black electroids and the evil red electroids.
The
they
negative.
Were imprisoned in the eighth dimension.
And yet they were all first named John, and that wasn't just a clerical error or them gaming the system. They all back home were named John something, too. I don't know if you catch that.
John Smallberries.
It wasn't just when they all came
John
to
Yaya.
Downers Grove, New Jersey, or Grover's Mill, or whatever it was, the War of the Worlds.
Oh, I'll give them that. That was a nice little thing they put in there.
It was pretty clever, yeah.
The War of the Worlds. See, that's the thing. Throughout this thing, I did have some genuine laughs. I was like, that was a good joke right there.
Yeah.
Like the whole Mr. Wizard.
Oh, and their delivery. Line. Yeah, there's some great
But
lines.
He is a real wizard.
Well, he was like, he was like, wasn't he on TV? And he's
You're
like,
thinking of Mr. Wizard.
That made me laugh. And there was a lot of genuine lines where I was like, oh, this is funny. And then there was a lot of genuine things like the whole War of the Worlds thing where you're like, oh, this is clever.
Mm-hmm.
But then in between it was like, Yakov Smirnov, yes, Yakov Smirnov,
right?
Yakov Smirnov blowing a line, and they just left it in there.
Leave it in. That was the best one out of 12 takes.
And he's like a security advisor to the president.
Can we just a quick minute about what the heck is going on with the president? Why he's in an inversion chamber?
He's having back trouble.
Buckaroo
says, I'm sorry, you're having so much bad
stuff like this.
That decision made?
Right. It's stuff like this that made me think there's a whole other world.
The Oval Office set was really expensive. They needed.
And Buck even comments on it. And goes, so you know your back's killing. You know, like, I know why, you know. But
it's symbolism. He has the weight of his world on his shoulders as president.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
Symbolism.
The president was one of the best underactors.
The only explanation I'll take is the actor actually hurt his back.
And they couldn't find a replacement. So he's like, well, I got my inversion table in the trailer. He's like, fine, bring it on set.
Yeah, yeah.
We got 6 more days to shoot this. Let's go.
Put your arm in a sling and let's go.
And I would have loved to have been involved in the set design and set dressing and prop mastering of this movie, because they had so many cool gadgets and doodads. And
the interior of Yayodyne was actually shot at my house.
Seems like it based on all the kipple. But there was so much just greeblies and doodads and dinos and tubes and switches. And it was a button pusher switcher's dream inside the truck, the Very Thunder truck or whatever it was called. Thanks, Scott.
The jet truck.
The jet truck. That's it. The F-150 jet plumber special truck.
But hey, it was all handmade.
I think
all
it's
practical.
Capable of Mach 5 with a top speed of 500 miles per hour. Did you notice that? It's like, what's this thing supposed to do? Mach 3? And apparently he's only doing like 500 miles per hour as its top speed.
It only needs to go 88 miles per hour. We learned that.
That's to travel in time. The eighth dimension requires a whole different level of speed, okay?
And that darn sound. That every time anybody mentioned it, it was on screen.
All you gotta do is touch it, it would make that noise.
Right.
That's so you know that it's the oscillation overthruster. It's there and working.
So as someone who loves this movie, not Scott, I'll acknowledge there are a ton of people who love this movie. You go to conventions and people are wearing Buckaroo Banzai Institute shirts.
Alamo still shows this as a midnight movie on the regular.
So help me out here because I see parts of it. Like it makes sense to me that if this is a live action anime, if you sell it to me that way, it makes sense to me why nerds like this. So there's something in nerd culture. I mean, to the point that you are even showing us, to the point that the Star Trek The Next Generation has references to this in it. And I know that there's other stuff, too. I know Stranger Things has references to certain parts of this movie.
Oh, cool.
There's tons of... This has influenced filmmakers.
It's in Ready Player One.
Right.
The outfit he chooses to go to the ball.
Oh, that's right.
He eats Buckaroo Banzai.
Exactly. So I'm wondering, as someone who locked in early at the time, because Mikey and I missed it. Mikey didn't see it all the way through till now. I didn't see it all the way through till now. I just saw pieces of it here and there in the early 90s. So, and you can weigh in on this, Brad, too, because you saw it back in the thing. What do you think culted this? Was it just the VHS and the let's grab this thing? It's crazy. You got to see how crazy this is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a lot of, you know, the blockbuster Easter egg hunts.
There had
like I mentioned earlier.
There hadn't been anything quite like this when it came out.
And there's this kind of myth out there that it was financially the movie was a bust. It made like its entire run, it only made like half of its entire budget back. But currently, right now, it has a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes score from both critics and audiences alike.
Seems like a bit, though.
Yeah, I'd like to think like, that's kids, man.
Are there just a lot of dudes like me who've gone back in to Rotten Tomatoes?
This movie's great. That's my vote. But it didn't make a lot of money when it first came out, is what you were saying?
It did not. Okay. It financially, it was not successful at the box office. I don't know. It's just, to me, it's got such a campy, quirky appeal to it that it's so... quotable. There's so many great things that, you know, again, you recognize these quotes no matter where you go. There you are.
Right.
I remember I stood up to ask a question at a panel one time at a con, and I was wearing, I have a Banzai Institute t-shirt, and he said, oh, no matter where you go, you're right there.
There you go.
Don't be mean. You know, I was surfing the internet, and I found some stuff about its cult status. The website Tilt, which is a survey website, and they do, you know, pulse of the internet kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They did a cult movie face-off bracket. and Buckaroo Banzai won the whole thing, hands down. It took, it was, so they did kind of vote for your favorite movie and they did one-on-one kind of competitions. Round one, they did The Last Dragon. Anyone remember the Shogun of Harlem?
Sure. Yeah, Barry Gordy.
Leroy and they had a different electric effect.
They did, they had the glow.
As they were fighting. It beat the heck out of that one.
What, Bruce Lee's Last Dragon?
No. The cult movie Last Dragon.
Oh, I thought you were Bruce Lee.
The Shogun of Harlem.
Okay.
Do you remember the movie?
Oh, very
Brad?
Much so. Yeah.
Yeah, with little Leroy who was socially awkward. Anyway, that's another rewatchable. round two, it went up against Big Trouble in Little China.
There we go.
As far as cult movies, they voted it 85%. Voted for Buckaroo Banzai, 15%.
There you go.
And then, of course, round three, it went up against and beat Labyrinth.
Oh, we talked about
Labyrinth. Labyrinth 96
right.
to 4.
It's well, totally right up there.
But here's
the cult standing.
No, I get it. And it makes sense because it is more of a... I don't know who these people voting are.
Yep.
But
they're those four out of five dentists.
No, but four out of five dentists agree. But if they're as nerdy as I am, truly, if you're going to use the word cult,
there you go.
Buckaroo Banzai should win because cult movies should be liked by the smallest, most rabid group ever.
There you go.
No, but what I'm saying is like Labyrinth is, I think, more universally known and loved.
Agreed.
I'd say it's less of a cult movie.
Yeah, has a little bit more Disney going for it.
What was the other one?
Big Trouble in Little China.
I would not call that a cult movie at all.
Kurt Russell, man. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't call that a cult movie.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the right makings. Right, but he's saying almost the opposite.
But what I'm trying to say is, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show, that's a cult movie.
Yeah.
Even though tons of people go to see the things and they do the talk along,
sure.
But that the group of people, they dress up, they're rabid,
they're
crazy about it, right? That's not happening with Labyrinth. That's not happening with Big Trouble in Little China.
True.
That's what I'm saying. If you're calling something cult, in my mind, it's got to be a cult. What a cult versus iconic. A religion.
Yes. Well, okay, so what do you think? What makes a movie a cult movie?
It has to be loved by a small, tiny, rabid fan base.
I don't think it has to be tiny. I think the fan base can be.
I mean a minority, though.
Yeah.
Like, for example, something that I know that we all like, and we know a lot of people who like it, but a lot of people don't know what it is Serenity and Firefly. That's turned into a cult thing. Mm-hmm. I have T-shirts for it.
Oh, and see, I think Serenity and Firefly is way more mainstream.
No, I walk around with the T-shirt, and it's only every once in a while, and the people give you, like, a knowing nod.
And they call you Captain.
They call you Captain, stuff like that, or, you know, stuff like that.
I know.
So, but, yeah, I mean, I agree with the ranking because this movie is very culty. I mean, to the point.
Yeah, because, I mean, if it lost a little bit of its money and you were saying it had production troubles, you know, but it is still prevalent in pop culture today.
That's for sure.
30 years later, so, I mean, something to say for that.
But seeing this thing all the way through, and you took offense, but I really thought there should have been theater seats and two robots and a dude down at the bottom of this movie. Because
there is a little bit of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 vibe.
I've seen stuff on MST3K that is the same level of movie as this one.
I get
but
it.
Some of the stuff on MST3K is so below.
Some of the stuff
production
is
value on Buckaroo Banzai.
No, but if you watch the new one with the great Jonah Ray, there are a lot.
I stand by my statement. There are some of those movies on the new one.
No, there's some of
that
them.
There are some, but there are some that are way.
Of course,
below.
There are some, but Buckaroo Banzai. The only reason they can't put Buckaroo Banzai in there is because of its cult status,
and the fact that it's in licensing hell right now.
And so, well,
oh, I'd imagine yeah.
That's why we never got. The Against the World Crime Syndicate that we were
so
promised.
Yeah, there was a whole subplot of Hanoi Shin. Okay, Hanoi Shin was the ultimate bad guy.
How do you know this?
Because this is his wheelhouse.
Because didn't you announce him as the Buckaroo Banzai expert?
No, but this wasn't in the
not in there because Hanoi Shin, he's the head of the World Crime League.
Okay.
That is referenced on the title card, on the very last, the ending card.
There you go.
After
the dance-off in the L.A. Aqueduct. But yeah, it's supposed to be, and it was going to be a whole franchise, and of course,
and
best
a comic book, right? That's
and
why
a
they
comic book,
book,
and there were all kinds of things, but Richter, and there's another guy that wrote it, I forget his name, they thought they should have the intellectual property, and it defaulted, and it's in licensing hell. In fact, there have been several attempts to remake it. There was going to be a TV show in the 80s.
I remember that vaguely.
And then that never came about, and then it was going to get revived again in the early aughts, and then even as late as 2016, Kevin Smith was talking about, I want to redo Buckaroo Banzai. And I remember when that came out, I went and told you guys, because I was excited that day. I was like, Kevin Smith is going to do my movie! And then Kevin Smith realized, oh, this is in licensing hell. I'm out. You guys go figure it out. He walked away from it.
So is part of the appeal of this movie the could have been?
Sure.
If they had only not messed with it, then what?
Sure felt like there could be so much more to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it didn't have production troubles and if it didn't, like, red tape wasn't preventing it from being explored a little bit more, one thing it does have going for it is that this is an all-new world and there's so much crazy stuff going on that they only explain half of, that there really is a chance to tell more and flesh it out and have it make a little bit more sense and not be so anime. I mean, if this was an anime, this would be part one of like 18, probably.
Right.
And the thing is, too, is like I'm, and this is what we do on this podcast. We try to figure what we can enjoy in things that other people enjoy. Because I'm not just going to sit here and say, like, Scott, you're an idiot for liking this movie. I'm not going to say it. Because the thing is, if this movie was an anime, I think I would have given it so much more leeway.
If
it was exactly the same, shot for shot, scene for scene.
Guitar sound for guitar sound.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, this is pretty crazy thing. So, sure, they were probably doing something almost too bold in a lot of ways.
That makes sense.
It was both exactly of its time and ahead of its time all at the same time. That was a quote I read the other day. I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I didn't think it was so 80s, on your own.
But so ahead of its time.
good stuff.
It is of its time, but the weird thing is they never really say what time it's in. Like, is it in the future? Like, we're talking.
It sure feels like it should be like near future or something, like, doesn't it?
It really towed the line where I couldn't tell if the fashion and the sensibilities and the set decorations were like just overly 80s or meant to be futuristic, and they just couldn't figure out which side of the line they were on.
It's 1990.
1990? Oh, yeah.
And half of the show was filmed at a charity haunted house.
It's 6 years in the future, and the world has gone topsy-turvy.
So other fun facts, there actually is an alternate opening to it. There's the theatrical release and then the extended edition.
Yeah, we watched the theatrical.
The extended edition actually has Jamie Lee Curtis as Buckaroo Banzai's mom.
Oh, that's fun. There.
And it actually has kind of her...
Wait, so it's like a flashback?
Yeah, it's like a flashback.
I was going to say, for the love of... I was like, she's like, what, 20 back then?
You see young Dr. Hokito. You see Buckaroo's dad is working on the jet propulsion jet car and the oscillation overthruster and all that. In fact, if you notice, there's actually a picture of Jamie Lee Curtis in the cockpit of the jet truck. When he travels through. That's actually Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, the story is a mess in this movie.
Yeah,
it really is.
But it's almost like it's supposed to be. I mean, it's like that's a whole other character in the movie is just how all over the place this
exactly.
Thing is.
And at one point, Hanoi Shin was, you know, he killed his mom, and he killed Penny Pretty, and we never found out why. We just know that Hanoi did it. He references Penny's death as Peggy's death.
We'll allow you one.
But they decided in post-production to go through and cut out all the references to Hanoi Shin because it was just one more layer of an already really complicated story that people were having trouble following. So they cut out all the Hanoi Shin stuff. So if you go back, don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but if you go back and you watch the extended release, you get like 5 extra minutes at the front end that adds nothing to the story whatsoever.
That's amazing.
Other than Jamie Lee Curtis in 1984.
Oh, that's a pretty good addition to any story, really. And 1984 Jamie Lee Curtis.
Sure. That was about the time of Trading Places.
There you go.
It was.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
And it fits in. I mean, we were saying this movie doesn't really make much sense. There are some random scenes, so the fact that they threw another random one in the beginning, I guess it's just on brand.
There is a lot of things that happen in the movie that they do just to contradict and make you go, that take you out and go, wait, why is that there?
Like Peter Weller on his motorcycle doing a little loop-de-loop, taking his bow tie off before going to the next scene. Really,
that's exactly it. Yes. Why did
it's
he
so,
do that?
So random and silly, I had to mention it twice. We already brought it up.
I know.
It's almost like it was in his contract. He's like, I got to prove that I'm doing my own stunts. Quick, film me on this motorcycle real quick.
Yeah, then he shows up with a spacecraft, and he's all exhausted and tired and... You know, but still willing to bust his old mentor out of the box in the van.
Also, is Pee-wee Herman supposed to be trying to dress like Buckaroo Banzai?
I don't know which came first. There were some similarities.
Buckaroo
came first.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
You're right.
So is Pee-wee Herman a nice nod to that?
Well, wait a minute. But Paul Rubens was doing Pee-wee Herman in the comedy clubs way before he ever...
And we had him in Meatballs in the late 70s, early 80s.
There you go. It might be an internet
and
bet.
The horse you rode in.
Take a guess at some point.
Some research tool we could use to discover the answer.
Nah.
We'll do what Pete Holmes says and live with the curiosity for a minute. Let a listener chime in and tell us. Who came first, Pee-wee Herman, Buckaroo Banzai, the chicken, or the egg?
Or the guys from the hamburger train. Sorry. It's an early Pee-wee Herman thing.
Oh.
Deep cut for super fans.
There you go.
What does Cherry have to say? Speaking of Cherry, what was up with the double-decker sofas that are referenced in the Lego movie.
That's how
by
he
the
could
way.
Afford his helicopter.
So.
Yeah, that's
there's another Buckaroo Banzai reference.
Yes, absolutely.
Double-decker sofa.
It's great.
They were a Junior Ranger
Blue Blazers, yeah.
Irregulars.
Blue Blazer Irregulars, that's right.
Yeah. And he could afford a helicopter.
That's what I was going to say. You made a great point. Like, yeah. His double-decker couch business is doing quite well because you hear the helicopter sound later in the movie. He's like, hey, somebody's stealing my helicopter. And we were all like, you have a helicopter?
Your son has a shotgun?
That's the guy. Yeah, no, that's like a machine gun. That's not a shotgun.
That was one of those. I know what that was, one of those Ruger. What's it called? It was the type of gun that they used on the A-Team.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah?
There's a specific type of rifle that they used on the A-Team that really wasn't used a lot of places, but it was used by Hollywood.
Oh, there you
because
go.
Because it shot blanks really well without getting super dirty.
Neat.
So that's why the A-Team shot so many rounds off.
When you can find them.
That they shot so many rounds they used that. I think it's a Ruger something. I forget what it was.
That's fun, though.
I looked into it because I thought about if I was ever going to have to buy a rifle, I'd buy an A-Team rifle.
Special shout out to Scooter with that rifle because I'm pretty sure he's the whole reason the third act of the movie is successful just because the little kid's along. Like, he gets the overthruster back. He holds the secretary prisoner. He gets to ride in the jet car. Shout out to Scooter. Probably my favorite character.
That was an also fun little hashtag bad movie thing where sometimes the guns would shoot out stuff and sometimes they would just make a bang noise.
And kind of move the gun a little bit,
But it also had ship-destroying lasers in there. So, tit for tat. They ran out of laser budget and couldn't afford muzzle flares, but...
That's right. You don't buy lasers like you buy electricity. Lightning bolts.
The movie was really ahead of its time. I mean, after all the spaceships were organic.
they were all made out of meat parts. It was so interesting and yet
totally
weird.
Ahead of its time. Pre-trend.
And you gotta fly it barefoot.
Yeah.
Shoes off and... Work the feet.
There's a lot of weird decisions made that I just love to have been able to sit there. And now some of that comes out in the pre-production in the movie because the script got written over 10 years.
Yes,
and there were several treatments, one of which was called "Get the Jet Car," said the president.
That sounds like a Buckaroo Banzai.
Wait, another one was "Lepers from Saturn." These were all supposed to be like the names of adventures, and one of the author or the guy who wrote the screenplay started it and stopped it like 20 times.
So he started it in like the early 70s?
Like mid to late 70s when these guys first started working
together.
Yeah,
there were several sources that they pulled names and people and concepts from. Different old Flash Gordon era kind of stuff.
Oh, I can definitely see the Flash Gordon.
They shopped the treatment around for years. And that's what became the Lepers from Saturn or something like that, which they changed to Lizard Men from Saturn.
Are you sure that's not one of the episodes that the dude wrote? Like Max Rauch or somebody, I forget his name,
right.
Wrote like 200 episodes for the TV show that was supposed to happen.
No, this was before the movie even got made because it was the version that we got made was the one that got them the deal from whoever, New Song Entertainment or whoever it was that did it.
But that's crazy to hear that there's that much content. Like we were saying,
yeah,
there really is a whole world to explore.
It felt like there should be so much.
Oh, yeah. There was so much, so many plans, so many things were supposed to happen if the movie did well. But how many times does the tentpole movie not do well and so the next five movies get scrapped or whatever it is?
There's only so much 80s weirdness that can make it as a smash hit.
At the time, I don't know that it all knew that it was 80s madness. I think it just encapsulated the 80s so well, even kind of unaware of that itself. They're like, well, string bean ties and dual leather belts are in, so that's what we're putting in there.
It definitely seems like that kind of movie. It's like, we have to make this choice today. Okay, go this way. All right, we're doing it. Let's go.
And then at some point, they knocked over a costume shop or something, and like, all you guys have are cowboy outfits? All right, yeah, we'll take them all.
Here's a flapper dress. Put Penny in it.
Right.
No, Jeff Goldblum totally came out of the dressing room already in that cowboy outfit, and he's like, I called dibs on this one.
Yeah, I brought my own.
I have never been a cosplayer, but I'm thinking about putting me together a jersey cosplay.
We'll get you a nice smart bow tie and a nice blazer. You look good.
I brought my own outfit. 100% Goldblum.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why you insist on dressing up for the podcast. So, you know we're not recording this on video.
We're not?
Yeah. That is a great cowboy outfit you're wearing, though.
All right, so before we wrap it all up, let's do our assuming positions positivity. Let's go around.
Yes.
And pick out something that we super liked out of Buckaroo Banzai.
Okay.
So we'll start with Mikey.
Start with Mikey. I love the music in it. I love the incorporation of the music in it. It's such an MTV's vibe, and it makes it very of its time. But he's a traveling rock star, and his soldiers are his band. It's such a cheesy novelty that I buy 100%. I just want to form a band that fights crime right now and just go for it. So
I am ready to be your Hong Kong Cavalier.
I think that's my favorite bit about the whole thing. Like, you could take that crew and put it into different narratives and continue this whole world. So I think having that crew and having them be all diverse and so fun, that's the highlight of the movie for me. Hong Kong Cavaliers.
All right, Scott, we know you love it anyway, but what do you love most about it?
God, so many things. This is hard for me.
To pick what you love most?
I'm going to have to say just the characters. John Lithgow, so memorable, so great as Emilio Lazzaro.
Yeah, he was chewing that scenery till it was nothing.
He was great.
And working on all of his accents at once. It was awesome.
John Parker, you know, of course, Buckaroo Banzai, Perfect Tommy, you know, his cast of characters around him. I love the characters. They're so quirky, so memorable, so much fun.
Oh, John Parker with his hands thing. That's how you knew
he was
an alien.
All of the Black Electroids had the hand
for
handshakes.
No, just because they said, hey, you're aliens, move your hands weird.
The guys were all like, you mean like this? And they're like, yeah, perfect. Keep it up.
That one's that you can totally tell he's wearing gloves.
I really enjoyed, to expound on that, I really enjoyed the fact that the movie per capita had more either like familiar faces or people that now we know that maybe at the time weren't as big, but you've got so many character actors in there.
Oh yeah.
The trio of the bad guys running around doing the work with Christopher Lloyd are like a who's who of, you know, cheesy, creepy character actors that you've seen in everything.
The big booty crew.
And the other thing I like about it is the familiarity, the assumedness. That's like, we're going to put it in your face just how crazy this is. And it's going to seem like second nature by the end of the movie.
Well, for me, actually, I thought the special effects were not that bad. They did not look terrible.
Yeah, there's nothing that really was too detracting.
And also, too, I thought the aliens, the alien costume design was well done as well. It didn't seem too much like they were put on little rubber masks from... You could actually tell that was Christopher Lloyd still.
Yeah.
Which is a good, that shows it's a good costume. They had good makeup effects, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That's true. You could tell them all apart.
And ultimately, what I said before, now, once I looked at it as this is a live action anime, once I bought into this is a live action anime, I was like, okay, I think I can understand where this is going and what's happening here. Because that's what it seemed like to me. So.
Yeah, you really, to tie your two points together, Brad and Kev, you really do have to buy in because they're not, they give you a little crawl like Star Wars in the beginning, but it's a paragraph and then it's just off to the races.
And it's
like,
just
here's
as
the weirdness.
Bizarre Absolutely. As the rest of the movie yeah. is.
Did it bump you that the crawl at the beginning was angled the wrong way?
Yeah, I've been trained by Star Wars. It should be going away on the glass plate.
That's right.
All
right,
so those are our pause. So now it's time for our pizza rating.
Because the pizza is here, so now we must rate it with pizza.
Rate it with pizza. So even though we're full of popcorn and Twizzlers and candy.
It's movie night, though.
Yeah. So... pizza ratings. Mikey, where are you at? Out of 8 slices of pizza, is that what we usually do? Yes.
8 slices.
8 slices of pizza.
I'm going to challenge Scotty and Brad to think of, if you can, the first time you saw the rating, like if you had to make a rough guess for your past self. But I don't have a previous rating, so this is my first time seeing it, first time rating it. I'm going to give it 5. It loses a little bit because it is of its time and it shows a little bit, but I was entertained the whole way. I bought into the premise, like we're saying, good characters, awesome lightning. I give it 5 slices, but it's the 80s, so you're going to lose a couple slices there.
I would just ask you, what do you think I'm going to rate it?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, these are 8 slices, supreme pepperoni, extra cheese,
and time's
all
done.
That, and a bag of chips.
Time's done nothing to that pizza?
Absolutely not.
Same 8 slices back then.
But you guys
have
to. I mean, this
now.
Is one of my go-to movies. Like, if I need to go to sleep at night, I plug this movie in. It's in general rotation.
So this is the junk food pizza that your 8-year-old self would have ordered then, and
Absolutely.
You still order now to make yourself feel good. I love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
I didn't not like a lot about this, other than some of our MST3K type comments, and I wish we could have done a show of nothing but that. But I think back then I was with you. I really enjoyed it, and I would have taken the whole pizza. Now I enjoy most of it, and I would eat more than half this pizza, so I'm with Mikey on the 5 out of 8 slices.
There you go. And now we get
now
to
it's
Kevin's
you.
Slave.
Man. Know that I am ready to come over this table at you.
Yeah, I might get the
we're all friends here.
This is the safe yeah. pizza circle.
The it safe is. Pizza circle. So I like how Brad is like, this is a pizza you have to eat.
Yes.
So I never thought of our pizza rating that way before, but that's a wonderful way to do the pizza rating, everybody.
Sure.
Yeah. Think about how much of this pizza you want to eat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I'm only giving it 3 slices. Sorry.
3 slices. There you all go. Right.
If sorry, Scott, if you put the MST3K guys in it, they'd get more.
Sure.
But
this is not an MST3K movie.
Oh, stop. He's getting tears in his cowboy outfit.
Hey, man.
Wait, stop. Is somebody crying? wait. Is somebody not having a
don't
good
be negative.
It's me.
Don't be mean.
Don't be mean. That's it.
Just tease him. But 3 slices. You're coming to the table. You're having a meal with us. I can appreciate it.
3? That's all you're going to give it?
I'm only giving it. Sorry, man. I mean, I like.
It rates lower than Legend.
So Legend was great.
there you go.
I just.
Except for the whole pants optional thing.
The squatting.
The squatting and the pants optional.
A lot of squatting.
Squatting. It's more than Buckaroo.
Maybe I need to watch it again, but I don't really want to. So
we need to animate it so Kevin can get the full experience of the anime. So
probably. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, most of those slices are coming from the fact that I get it. Everybody, I get it, but I'm only giving it 3. I get it, but I'm only giving it 3.
That counts.
So... hey, look, I actually didn't like something. So all you listeners who are like, yeah, they're always...
I do have one final fun fact. It didn't come up, but the thing that throws off every viewer of this movie, the watermelon.
Yes. What is the watermelon?
The watermelon between
two... I'll tell you later.
I'll tell you later. And it's one of those things, and critics of the movie said like, oh, it completely takes you out of the scene, and they're in this big chase, and it just disrupts the flow.
Really?
What's it doing there? What is the point? The Banzai Institute for Biomedical Research is researching cures for world starvation. Imagine if you could drop a watermelon from an airplane. That's right. The Banzai Institute is working on designing a watermelon that can actually survive being dropped out of an airplane like a bomb and survive landing on the ground.
How do you know?
All of the wonderful nutrients and things from a watermelon. Because these are the wonderful things that the Banzai Institute is trying to do for humanity.
How do you know
this?
Who do you
work for?
How do you know this?
Why are you wearing a cowboy outfit?
Because I'm a nerd.
Bombing people with food. It makes so much sense.
It's pure world hunger. You're not just dropping watermelons on people.
Whoever those critics are, as a guy who just gave this 3 slices of pizza, whoever those critics are way too critical, because that didn't bump me at all. That didn't. I was just like... okay.
Oh, it's another random moment in this movie.
Mommy and all, I was
yeah,
like...
yeah, that's the part you're going to pick up on and be like, wait a minute.
And like, that single watermelon can take 2,300 pounds of pressure.
There's watermelon?
That is a watermelon that can take 2,300 pounds of pressure.
Those are going to kill people, not feed people.
Well, you've got to drop them in the right place.
It is in a drill press or something would hope. When you see it.
I'm still not sure how you cut it open, but...
so, yes, this... movie had a lot of I can see that stuff that you're digging into there. I get it. Yeah. I understand there's so much lost potential here. It could have been there's probably
it's my flavor of nerd.
There's probably tinkering the executive tinkering, I'm sure did so much to it. I can't stand executives messing stuff up. It happens so many times to so many good movies.
It's always a bummer, yep.
And what's beautiful, Scott, about you is you can see through all that. You know, you can see through all that. You can see straight to the vision that was trying to be shown. And you have joined the cult with the other cult members. And you see through it all. And you will worship at the temple of Buckaroo Banzai.
Always and forever.
And I bless you for it.
Exactly.
But I'm going to go over and hang out with Joss Whedon
and
his stuff. So.
But remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
There you are.
And if he's not ever down at the temple of Buckaroo Banzai, he'll be across the street at the Big Lebowski Shrine.
So, there you go. Yeah, the Big Lebowski. So,
that's a fun double feature.
Don't you say bad things about Lebowski. Oh, I will come over this table at you.
I like Big Lebowski.
That movie's sacred.
No, it is. And that's another one in the movies that people call cult movies. It's not a cult movie. Too many people like it. So anyway, you can find Scott at the temple of Buckaroo Banzai. You can find us on all our social medias at Assuming Pod. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Get on there, Buckaroo Banzai fans, and yell at me. You can also...
Yes, yell at him.
You can also Gmail us, assuming because this is at gmail.com. We got some thanks to do, and most everybody's here. So thank you to that guy, Brad, for doing on Aussie.
Thanks, guys.
Not Scott. Thanks for being here, and thank you for the production equipment.
As always.
Thank you, Jazzar, for doing our music. And most of all, thank you all for listening.
Go watch movies with your friends.
Is that not how your song goes?
That's how
it goes in my head.
We're going to go into the LA River dressed really cool and walk past
aqueduct
in slow motion.
Yeah, we're going to go.
But instead,
we're going to go walk past a graffiti that says assuming position.
Side note, they didn't have the song finished when they were filming that. They were actually walking to the beat of Uptown Girl.
Oh, okay. Well,
go walk to the beat of Uptown Girl, everybody.
See you later.
Kevin just did make me think, why the Hong Kong Cavaliers? I figured out the really dumb reason. I put myself in the writer's mind for this one.
He can't tell Asian people apart.
He didn't know the difference.
He's half Japanese and half American, so they had a band name that's half Japanese and half American. Hong Kong Cavaliers. Samurai Cowboys.
Hong Kong's in China.
Asian Cowboys.
No, he didn't know the difference.
Kevin, stop trying to make it make sense. It's not going to.